listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. Now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez. And before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, we got the one and only Bobby Osinski.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's going pretty good, Bobby. Next to him, we've got... I missed podcast 100, but we still love you, Scott Gershon.
So this is my 100.
That's right.
Yeah. Hi, Mike.
That's okay. It was Bobby Summerfield's 13th. So. And next to him, we've got Diego Stucco.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Good. And next to him, we've got, I'm going to say it. I'm going to be a brand new father. Brandon Burton.
Yes! Yeah. What's up, Mike? Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations. And finally, the one and only Iron Man of the Audio Nowcast, Rob Arbatier.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, Rob, I heard you had a little scary situation on the flight coming in today.
Yeah, I flew back into Burbank today, and it was unbelievably windy. And
hey, Rob.
If you're ever looking for a thrill ride, I'd recommend trying that
sometime. Don't fly on the wing next time. Go inside the plane.
Sit inside.
It was one of those where everybody's ready to hold hands and, you know,
and say,
sing
I love you.
Was it one of those where you open up your cell phone because you really don't care what's going to happen?
Yeah, pretty much. Actually, I knew something was up because we circled a few times and we came in from a different direction than usual, and I've flown into Burbank tons of times.
Right.
So I knew something was different, but it was unbelievably rough.
Wow.
Well, but so I made it back in time for the podcast.
So the question, if you had an iPad, would the Jeep, with the little thing be like flying vertical?
Would have thrown up on it.
And today we have a really special guest joining us today on the On Your Nowcast for the madness that we call Podcast 101 is David Franz. David.
Mike, thanks for having me.
David, he's a, well, if you go on davidfranz.com, one of the things is he literally wrote the book on Pro Tools because he wrote the book on Pro Tools. So we're going to be talking like about that. And also, you're also involved with a marketing company? A
music I have an artist development company.
Artist development. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But so welcome and feel free to join in. And you do not have to laugh at any of the jokes you don't want to. So guys, 101. Episode 101.
Yeah.
Starting
nice.
A new century. Okay, that's about it.
Thank everybody.
On a 102.
It's a lot of fanfare.
A little shorter. No, hey, you know, we just came off a little break between 100 and 101, and a few things happened out in the news that I wanted to talk to you guys about. And one thing I wanted to talk to you guys about was obviously the big new tech gig, that the piece of tech here that's coming out.
iPad 2.
Yep. And it's getting, you know, more powerful. It's getting, you know, better graphics. And before we start, you know, the podcast and we start our next 100 episodes, I kind of wanted to just go around the table and let you your mind wander. And where do you think it's going to go? Where do you think this whole technology audio is going to go? Because I can easily see with some of the things that we're going to talk about today, especially with like Pro Tools 9 becoming, for all intents and purposes, it's been set free. You can use any interface you want. But then you have something like the GarageBand coming to the iPad 2. So let's just speculate just a little bit. Bobby, what do you think is going to go? What do you think is going to happen in the next couple of years?
With the iPad specifically?
With music technology in general.
Well, probably the same thing that's happened the last 10 years, more evolution. There's no revolutions that I see or hear about. As far as the iPad 2, I see that as the perfect controller. I don't know if it's more than that or not.
Right.
Yet, personally. I don't have one, but I know a lot of people that do. I'll have one at the end of the week.
Forgive me.
I was waiting for it. But it just seems like it's the perfect controller.
I got you. Yeah. Scott, what about you and sound effects? What do you think? Where's technology going to go?
I just look at it as a lot of work coming towards me because iPad 2 is actually going to be the fourth game machine. Okay. After the Wii, the 360, and the PlayStation.
I got you.
So, no, the stuff, because I just came back from Game Developers Conference, And there were a lot of people with iPads
really
showing stuff. Yeah. So I think that I think the content creation on the iPad is going to be pretty special. I think that it's going to vest itself into a lot of industries. I think TV, you know, I've started watching CNN probably more on my iPad than on TV. And I think what's happening is that where I see the revolution being led by iPad, as well as, you know, obviously the Google tablets, is that people now are, you know, before you had a cell phone, it was cute. Look at all the cool things I could do. I could control Pro Tools right from this little screen. Everyone was like, yeah, it becomes more of a toy. Now, all of a sudden, I think the iPad is melding itself into an industry where at one point you had netbooks and you had laptops
right
that people used as a computer.
Right.
But now I think the tablet is bridging that gap as a informational, entertainment, all these different mediums in the size of was it the 10-inch screen?
Basically.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting, like right now when I go to dubbing stages, it used to be a row of Apple laptops. And now there's a row of iPads.
Wow.
And everybody's starting to carry it. And I think with it getting more powerful, a little bit faster,
right,
and having more capacity, I think people are going to be integrated into their lives similar to what a cell phone has been done. But now it's mobile entertainment on demand.
Right.
And that's important because now, you know, between music, between visual mediums, you look at AOL right now, and AOL is rebuilding themselves as a content creator. They're actually hiring all these different major people, Huffington Post
right.
And then Heidi Klum,
mm-hmm,
and they just have this long laundry list of amazing content creators. They have the Jonas Brothers creating stuff for the teens, and what they're doing is hitting all of the demographics. And what's happened, it's not going to be for your computer, it's going to be for your tablet. Because everyone's walking around with it.
That's a good point, because it's not just the iPad, too. Because you've got the Zoom tablet by Motorola that has some serious processing power. And then, RIM is coming out with the Playbook, which is another contender. So, you know, when I talk about iPad, I mean tablets in general and things like that.
But, you know, I have heard something that was interesting. I heard a couple comments at GDC about that. And they love the Apple iPad for one reason. It's consistent. The software and the hardware they know is compatible.
Right.
What happens is they get into the same problems when they used to do games for PCs.
Right.
All the hardware was slightly different, so you don't know what you're making games for, and including advanced apps. I'm not talking about Angry Birds, but there's something that – I mean, there's some games that I've seen that I even have on my iPad that is as good as the Xbox. And all of a sudden you're looking at it, and the visuals are just stunning. The problem is to do that in the Google – paradigm, the hardware is all different. Some people want to be lighter and faster.
Right.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you have a 3G version of your iPad?
No, I use the Wi-Fi at the moment, but the next one I'll probably go 3G.
Okay. Does anybody have a 3G version here?
No.
I've heard the 3G version is a lower quality. Not that the Apple couldn't do it, but the Verizon and other phone companies are more concerned that with more people wanting mobile entertainment, the pipe's not big enough. So what they're doing is automatically for people that have phones and tablets through 3G, they're actually forcing it to go with smaller.
Supposedly that's changed with the iPad too. I just read 15 minutes ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Latest news is breaking.
Are you trying to decide between the 3G and the Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
You know what? I've had the Wi-Fi. Get the 3G because you get both, and then you can shut the 3G off when you don't use
it. That's what I'm thinking
about. But there's occasionally those times when you go, God, I wish I could update something.
Yeah, I mean, I have a little MiFi, so I use my MiFi with my – Wi-Fi.
Hey!
But I've heard the MiFi break – the battery burns out pretty quickly.
No,
it just drains.
Not on mine. It's, you know – it. And the good thing about it is at least I have – access wherever I use it. So if you don't have that, then I would go ahead and spring for the
2G. So your phone is a hotspot then, right?
Well, no, I actually have my own little silver disc that is actually its own little hotspot. It can be – the whole podcast right now is being run on it. No, I'm just kidding.
It's a 3G
you know,
to
you
Wi-Fi
know what,
converter.
What's cool, yeah. What I see cool happening in the future, I see all these things connecting together because, for example, there is already a connection between iPads and other softwares. Oh, yeah. For example, mm-hmm. the Omnisphere TR, it's a remote control
right.
for Omnisphere.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then you can connect, let's say, your iPad with your MacBook Pro, so you have the fast machine,
right.
and you can do something else on the iPad. So maybe in the future there will be a way to connect even more machines together.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about like the reason, one of the reasons why I carry a MiFi too is then I have my own network that I come around. So I use my iPad to control my MacBook Pro. And it's pretty awesome because then I have my controllers, you know, especially if you use some of the different controlling software.
What's your Verizon bill at the end of the month?
Oh, it's not Verizon. I got Sprint.
Sprint.
They also have those devices that you just plug the iPad into, like the Alesis.
Oh, yes.
Stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's going to be
yeah,
a good
Yeah, I was talking about that with a guy.
Well, yeah, that's another thing is exactly. They have at the NAMM show, I saw Alesis. Actually, Kai was coming out with a 60-key keyboard version
right.
of
yeah.
the iPad controller. And let me tell you, the synths on the iPad are just getting better and better and better.
Apogee just released the Jam for the iPad.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
yeah,
a guitar
right.
Thing that you can connect. It's yeah. in the.
But, you know, all this stuff is really kind of cool, and it's pretty neat. But, I mean, realistically, though, do you guys ever see it making you know, replacing any of your main gear? It's
well,
still
one thing that I think the iPads are going to transition into and the tablets in general is probably not for a few more generations, but eventually they're going to fully make the transition from being consumption devices for media to creation devices.
Right.
Because the iPad 1 was definitely not trying to be a creation device.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it was a way for consumers to
it was an output device, not an input device.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
But that's going to change as time goes on because they will come out with incredibly convenient storage that's interchangeable between the units.
Yeah.
You have all these companies coming out with hardware for it,
yeah.
and it's a nice little form factor. So I think it will eventually make the transition to being a creation device.
No, I think you're right. Because
but it's not for a while.
Slowly but surely, because I just picked up I kind of do 3D animation on the side. It's something I like to do. And I just got my first 3D program for my iPad, and that was kind of cool.
To create or
yeah,
to?
Yeah, create. To create. And it's kind of primitive, but it's all there. It's all the tools.
Yeah.
There's a version of it, and it's getting there.
Well,
so.
You know, Sony introduced the 3D camera, user camera at the CES, so they are definitely pushing the 3D, so you must have a software to edit that footage.
Right.
So it makes sense.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is you know, the creative tools, you still have to have the creativity. You still have to have, you know, the talent. You still, if anything, it's going to spurn you to want to learn more stuff. You want to learn chords. You want to learn more music. And it's
mm-hmm.
easier to do that because
oh, yeah.
you got a little $10 piano app and you
right.
can learn your, you know, learn your chords. And you've got teach guitar on an iPad and stuff like that. So,
well, you know what? I saw a couple articles in The Economist that were talking about schools renting out iPads or tablets. And what they do is you pay for your books. So instead of all these young kids carrying, you know, 100 pounds of books, they carry a tablet, they lease it. Schools make a little bit of money on it because they can then just keep going and going and going.
Yeah.
So what's happened is an educational tool. I think tablets are going to or have the strong potential to really working themselves into.
That makes sense.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I mean, I teach for Berklee Music, their online school,
yeah.
and develop videos for lynda.com. And so all of that is super obviously going to be on the,
yeah.
the you know,
yeah.
the iPads.
Yeah, it's kind of exciting just to see where it is. But, you know, I will tell you that along with all these technological marvels and all these gadgets that we have, there's going to be some just craptacular music that's going to be coming out. I mean, just on a biblical scale, it's just the floodgates are going to
open. It always is. I mean, ever since you had the Porta Studio,
no, I know, but
the Tascam Porta Studio,
yeah. even
yeah.
more so. It's
oh, yeah.
it's amazing how and here's a good transition to something I want to talk about was it's amazing how you know as technology progresses that people want to create without paying the price and that people want to make movies like, you know, the filmmakers without really knowing how to make a movie or how to frame a shot.
You know what will change
music.
Compared to the Tascam thing? The speed on how fast you can output your stuff, because with the iPad everything might be connected to YouTube, Bandcamp, and SoundCloud, and this and that. So you just press a button and boom, it goes out on 3-4 different websites immediately.
But don't you think, you know, always heard articles in the 60s, you know, some of the folk bands and some of the rock bands, these people didn't know how to play early on, but they wanted to get laid, they wanted to get the girls, they, you know, it was fun, they would take some drugs, and people seemed to like what they were doing, and you know, a lot of people dropped off, but people, the best floated up a little bit, or you hear bands, the 80s hair bands, and they're like, yeah, we didn't really know how to play, we knew a couple chords, but we looked great, so all of a sudden...
Well, that was the influence of MTV, where it went from musical development to image development.
Yeah,
but also, you know, without the tools of samplers and digital audio workstations, you would not have the giant remake and remix market that you have now. And it's, you know, it's, you just don't, you didn't have the blatant ripoff of loops and the blatant ripoff of musical themes that you have nowadays in a lot of music. And it seemed like there was just always songs coming out. You had to write a song. If you wanted to be, you know, if you wanted to make it music, you wrote songs. But now you don't necessarily have to write songs. You can be an arranger. I mean, there's people who do nothing but are just brilliant at arranging beats and loops and could not, you know, write a song if their life depended on it. And I just think as we go forward with in technology, just be aware that, you know, don't get lazy, you know, take the tools that you have and go the extra step, because it's just going to make you, you know, one step farther than everybody else.
Well, the other problem with that too is if you're a really great editor or DJ or arranger or whatever, you could become the flavor of the month. The trick is to figure out what happens next month. Because once you've been the flavor of the month, you're then old.
Yeah, that's true.
Exactly.
And it's
something
that I and all my friends have been put through. It doesn't mean you're less talented or whatever, but perception, especially of the public, if you're the hot remix guy and then 6 months goes by, doesn't matter. You could be doing the greatest stuff ever. You're the old guy. So you really need, if you really want a career in this stuff, you have to be thinking a little further down the line.
Yeah,
that's the key. If you want a career, rather than
most people think they have a career when they have their first hit.
Yeah, but a year later they know.
Yeah, but you don't have to find out the hard way all the time.
Well, you know, all this little conversation just to say, just, you know, there's exciting things coming up. There's great things that are going to be happening. I mean, I'm tickled pink because of this stuff that's coming down the pipe right now. I mean, GarageBand on an iPad for $5. Give me a break. That's ridiculous.
Well, they have said that Apple has better ability than any other company to make you hate your Christmas present. Because, you know, you get something new on Christmas, and then sure enough, 2-3 months later, it feels like it's powered by coal.
Yes, but they can also make your Christmas morning, too. So,
you know what I don't see, though, is right now, the tablets don't have great storage or external storage or
ways. Well, that's what I'm saying. That's going to have to change.
So the thing is, it's great for some things, but saying, hey, I can do Rock Band on and record and do sequencing and have Pro Tools inside, it's not built for that. Because there's no, like, well, let me pop a hard drive on the back end of it.
Flash card, even.
There will be. And 64 gigs, that is a lot of room, really. 64 gigs is a lot of room. You can get a multi-track, you know, 24-bit, you know, 30 tracks of 24-bit audio.
You know where I see that easily. That what's taken that place, though, from the desktop is like iMacs. I mean, the iMacs now are so cool and so big, and the screens are so gorgeous that people are like, I don't need a desktop unit. I'm just going to use an iMac, pop a drive on the back side, and I'm done.
As long as you don't need slots.
Which most people don't anymore.
Because of Pro Tools 9, for example. Right.
Yeah, you know.
Well, you know, in the second half, we're going to talk about Pro Tools 9, because one thing I want to, in relating to what you were saying, one thing I want to say is, you know, the freedom and the mobility to create is going to change a lot of
things. It's becoming very important to me, for example.
Yeah, and collaboration is going to mean a different thing. And just, I mean, I'm working on a project right now where I'm going to have the mixer. He's going to be in Texas, you know. He's going to be doing the mixes and then feeding them to me, and then I'm going to be sweetening them here and then, you know, putting them on the master. And that's, you know, come on, that's just crazy, but it's just the reality of how it's going to go. Now, just take that same paradigm. We're doing it on, you know, computers, and somewhere down the road, that's going to be on laptops. You know, you're going to be able to do that kind of stuff.
But you know, what
I
see,
mean, on tablets. Excuse me.
What I see is kind of cool, though. They were kind of angling there. I don't know if we'll get there exactly, but is that you have a Mac? Let's say you have an iMac, a laptop, and a tablet. Well, first of all, do you have to buy the same program for each one? Mm-hmm. Can they all talk to each other? And the whole concept is that if you do something on the iPad, then you can go over to your desktop and it's there.
The synchronization issue.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it just becomes like you use the tool that you need. And, yeah. And you, when you talk about where is this going, the ability to have all of these different devices by Apple. And right. And then you can just say, I'm going to use the tablet for this, I'm going to use that for that. And it just all synchronizes with each other. That's cool.
Yep.
Yeah.
The Apple
yeah,
Cloud.
That's exactly
yeah.
The,
yeah. Exactly. That, and you know what? You brought up a good point, David. The whole cloud concept in the first place is going to make storage on your device not nearly as important as speeds get faster and we have access to the internet. The only thing that will be a bummer is when your internet goes down, which my internet right. went down at my house for like an evening, and I was just, I was back in the Stone Age.
See, that's, yeah. that's why 3G or 4G.
You know? Feel like, what am I doing, watching TV now?
Actually, I had my hotspot, so I wasn't totally cut off, but I wasn't blazing fast.
You almost
so
had like, to talk to your family.
Oh, no, I text
Wait,
them.
To show you how much we've become an addict, we found solar batteries that we've been buying.
Oh.
So if there's an earthquake in L.A., pop it outside, pop your iPad, your telephone. All of a sudden, we're not AC, fine, go away. We found ways of charging all of our toys.
So during an emergency, you can still play Angry Birds.
Yeah. We'll drink outside the pool. We'll sit in the backyard and play Angry Birds.
While the city falls down.
I found for $50 a hand crank.
What?
A hand crank generator with a flashlight and a USB port on the other side.
No.
Spits out five bolts, and it has a built-in battery, so you're just like,
come on, son, keep going. Don't stop.
Yeah.
I'm on level 16.
Yeah,
man,
but,
what a sad future we
I know, really. But, well, it's great to look forward and to see what's coming down the pipe. But let's talk about now. Let's talk about right now. One of the things that I wanted to talk to David about was he has a well, tell us a little bit about your artist development company that you have.
Okay. We're basically trying to do everything that what the old labels would do, but in a much more artist-friendly way and using all of the direct-to-fan type marketing tools that are out there. So we're using Topspin and we're trying to, you know, involve ourselves with music placement and all of the marketing aspects, creating videos, everything that a record label might do, but have the artist in the process a lot more. But thinking of it from developing the artist, actually really importantly starting from the ground level and building up.
And what's the name of your development company?
It's called Underground Sun.
I was reading on your website, and I really like the fact that you seem to be, you know, from an artist perspective and exploring a lot of these new based technologies, like SoundCloud and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you think is the one thing that, as an artist, you really want to take advantage of, obviously besides social media? I mean, let's go to the next step. What's the next step beyond the social media type of promotion for your act or your band? Or
well, sure. I mean, tying in with TV and film, one of my artists is big in slam poetry, so she is out in that realm, tying that in with, you know, whatever her interests are with the music side, so tying in different fan bases, capitalizing on anything that pops up. Like, we got a TV show theme song, so we're trying to use social media for that, but then, you know, tackling other aspects that might tie in with that show or other things that might be able to... we can roll that into. But I mean, even like she's this one artist I'm working on is also a TED fellow. So we can tap into that network. So it's tying into all of these different networks and pulling that all together is pretty important for us to make it happen.
Well, you're involved with TED?
Mm.
Oh, that's cool. Why don't you explain a little bit about what TED is for the people that don't know what that is?
TED. Okay, it's TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design, and it's this growing organization. I think it's been around for 25 years, and it pulls together the brightest minds in technology, entertainment, and design. So you might have speakers who come in and chat about, you know, the latest architecture or biomedicine or any of the arts, poetry, music. TED, they just had their huge Long Beach conference this past week. And so we were tuning in to the simulcast and checking out all the videos.
You could see it on Hulu, too, right? Yeah. I mean, they were doing... Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing is the presentations are 18 minutes long.
Yep. Yeah.
So you have to get it all in 18 minutes, and it's just enough that you can't get bored. But but all the speakers are so good, and the presentations are so good, you never get bored anyway.
Yeah, most of them are wonderful.
They're
really good. There are a few cases where you go, oh, I love what you're talking about, though, please.
Well, they have the two big ones, one in Oxford and Long Beach.
Right.
You know, but then they have this huge network of TEDx events where they happen all over the world pretty much every single day of the year, maybe a few times a day even. You know, so you might have one in Dubai and San Francisco on the same day and then all over the rest of the world. It's a pretty amazing network.
You know, the musical director for TED is Thomas Dolby.
Thomas Dolby, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. Wow. See, technology. It's just going faster and faster and faster. Well, hey, I'll tell you what. We're going to take a break because one of the things we're going to try to do...
I'm going to go buy my iPad, too, now.
No, no. This 100 is going to try to keep our podcast at an hour.
Wow.
Nice. Because when we come back, we're going to talk Pro Tools 9. Because, like I said, David literally wrote the book on Pro Tools 9. On Pro Tools. And but I just got Pro Tools 9. I installed it on my laptop. And it's truly been a game changer in so many ways.
From Pro Tools 9 from Eli or Pro Tools 9 from HD to Pro Tools?
No, I went from Pro Tools 9 from Eli.
Oh, okay.
But I've got an HD rig that I'm selling now because it's that good. All right, so we'll take a break and we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to Audio Nowcast. And before the break, we were just celebrating the fact that we had a break that early.
You know why? Because I had nothing to say.
That's so funny. On so many different levels. But I wanted to dive into this. I've been just kind of itching to get into this part. We're gonna talk Pro Tools. So if you're a Cubase or Logic or Live, just sit back, enjoy the ride, Brandon.
Play with your iPad.
That's right. Because I recently installed Pro Tools 9 on my laptop. And gang, that is about as close to audio nirvana as I've gotten in a long time.
Which is by an HD, though.
No, let me tell you why. Let me tell you why. Because I was opening up sessions that I couldn't play back on my HD3 rig. Actually, I couldn't play back on Martin's HD3 rig without losing voices and CPU. And it was just playing them back. And I have the native version of a lot of the same plugins. And it was amazing how much power you have in your laptop. And now that Pro Tools 9 is not tied into any specific I/O, I was playing back sessions through my built-in audio interface with minimal latency. There was latency there.
Yeah, there was a good noise floor there.
Right. Yeah. But just the fact that I didn't have to have a dongle, I could put in headphones. And yes, there is some noise, but it's not that bad. I mean, we're talking, you know...
192 it's tracks of that?
No. you're not going to do 192, but I was doing at least 76 tracks, music tracks. And it was
stereo?
Keeping them...
76 stereo tracks?
Some stereo, some mono.
Okay.
And it was keeping up with all the edits. And it was just... It was really amazing. I mean, I was really excited because here are these giant, massive sessions that at least I thought were massive. We're just playing back with no problem. And with the native plugins that I have, my CPU was, you know, in the lower third.
And you're talking about the previous generation of MacBook Pros.
Exactly.
Not the latest that just came out.
Exactly. My MacBook is 2009, you know, so it's almost 2 years old. So, yes, it's time
for
a new one.
You know what? The big key, though, between that and the TDM? Floating point. All of a sudden, Pro Tools native is floating point and TDM is not. So you get summing differences. And that's what we've been finding is that, you know, as much as we hate to admit it, the summing is better on a native rig than it is on a TDM rig.
You heard it here first. But what's so amazing is just having that kind of portability and just that kind of power in your laptop. Because I can just see scenarios of people doing crazy, wild things, Diego.
Here I am. That's so, what's happening now.
So when I...
Don't give him fire.
I'm down with fire.
So when I found out that David was going to be our guest, I wanted to, you know, curb my enthusiasm, and we'll go back to that. But look, we're just going to go all the way back a little bit. Not all the way back as far as Pro Tools 3, but...
That was painful. Please, let's not go back there.
But I wanted to talk a little bit about... David actually wrote the first book on Pro Tools. It was version 5, and the name of the book was...
Producing in the Home Studio with Pro Tools.
And back then, what was... Tell us some of the things, the workflow, some of the things that you were doing back in version 5 and when you were starting writing. What were some of the challenges that you had when you started your book?
Well, it was the first LE version. So, I mean, nobody, even at Berkeley when I was going to school there, we only had one TDM system there, you know, during that time. So nobody really knew kind of how to use this stuff. And when they announced that the LE version was going to come out, I mean, it was going to blow up. We all probably saw that coming. So Pro Tools 5, I mean, the MIDI implementation was pretty minimal. Yep. They brought in the guys from the old Vision software and put that in there, which was great. But, you know, it still lagged way behind in Logic. So, but the audio editing, we always knew that was terrific. So dealing with... That disparity was a little tricky for a lot of people to kind of give in to Pro Tools being MIDI, you know, having MIDI capabilities.
Right. And I'm sure you had to do a lot of education on just DAWs in and of itself, you know, to a lot of, you know, record guys, a lot of music guys who were just kind of dipping their toes. Because I knew a lot of guys who came in. Not too many people came in on number 3, although they were starting to. But by the time Pro Tools 5 was coming around, you were seeing people jumping in left and right.
Definitely. And I mean, but there was a lot of, you know, people were tape bound, obviously, you know, they were like, oh, digital, can't do it in that.
Time was still,
I think Ricky Martin's Livin' La Vida Loca was the first song that was mixed in Pro Tools that became like a number one song.
Really?
Yeah. So, wow. I mean, when was that? 2002 or something like that.
You know what? I actually worked with Desmond Child like a year after he wrote and produced that song, and there was still nothing else he would talk about. And there were a lot of good stories, but they were all about that song. That song changed a lot of lives. Yeah. But I don't remember what year it was. I was going to guess late 90s, though.
Yeah.
I don't think it was 2000 yet.
Hmm. I don't know. I think it might have been.
Really? We'll see. It all blurs together. You don't
Where's
have
that iPad?
Come on.
We can,
someone doesn't have
on.
An iPad here?
he's looking it up.
We'll get an answer before
that. To you by
yes, it was
before
nice.
The end of the podcast.
Whichever listener to the podcast gets it to us first.
Right.
It can't be.
Wins so, another so, Yamaha console from Rob.
David, could... I guess you wrote a different revision for each revision of Pro Tools then, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what was the differences then between the Pro Tools revisions? And
right. So what? Version 6, a lot more MIDI implementation. Version 7 was even more. And then they... 7? Oh, geez. Pull these different versions together. I mean, we've seen so many jumps up, and I mean, going into 9 is, I mean, they finally, I think, have pulled all of the best kind of stuff together.
So the thing you need to do is write the holy grail of keystrokes. Because I don't care how many demos I've had. You go, wait. What's that keystroke? Yeah, that one's not in the manual.
Yeah, right.
So I want someone to do the definitive manual of keystrokes.
I have a friend. He teaches at the Musicians Institute in Hollywood.
Right.
He's one of the few guys in the world with the maximum certification. Mm-hmm. He told me how the test works. He goes there and he has to say, without even seeing the keyboard, all the key commands, and there's a huge number of them. And when I heard...
He's got to verbally say them?
Yes.
But he must not be very good, because I can't tell you what I'm doing, but all I know is my fingers just start
going. I do the same, but sometimes I'm forgetting what I'm doing, and I'm like, oh my God, my fingers, they don't match with the keyboard anymore.
And I have to go, it's this motion, or that motion. Yeah.
It's the triple claw.
Right, the triple claw.
And when you jump back and forth between PC and Apple, it makes it even more Why doesn't that work?
Really quick, 1999.
Thank you.
All right. So anyhow, getting back to David. So you're writing these books. You wrote the book on Pro Tools, and you kind of knew things were going to be kind of special. Why do you think Pro Tools, of all the DAWs that are out there, kind of clicked the way it did?
Oh, people coming from the audio editing world, I think it just sounded better from the audio channel, or you know, through the processing of it. And then nobody else had the same audio editing features.
Right.
And so...
I think it's the hardware.
No, you know what? I disagree with both of you.
Because there were a lot of systems that had just died in time
for
that to happen.
We had all of the $100,000+ systems, and the reality was better features, and they sounded way better.
Way better.
But here's the thing. They were cheaper.
Yep.
Synclavier, Waveframe, all of those things.
Fairlight.
This was like, for $2,000, you get this. I remember when Sound Tools came out against Synclavier, and Synclavier went, $350,000 for this. And they're like, $2,000 for that. And they're like, and you're like,
that's true.
And the sample sell. And all of a sudden, everyone's like, maybe I'll get that. And yeah,
It did take a while.
So it was funny, because I always see people going, wow, Pro Tools is really expensive. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, compared to other shit.
It's only cost you $10,000.
Well, you know, that was one of the smart things that DigiDesign did back then, though, was the implementation of Sample Cell into Pro Tools, which made a lot of sound editors. Like when I used to work at a sound editing company in the Valley, that's what all the guys were using. All their sound effects libraries were on Sample Cell. And they were using that, which just gave it a foothold into the motion picture, into the whole editing. Because at that time you had... You know, Pro Tools, but she also had a really great product that I learned on, which was Audio Vision from Avid. That was a phenomenal program that did things that I wish Pro Tools would do, like you could have nested sessions within sessions and just things that, you know.
Oh, they were both owned by Avid. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's why, right?
That's it.
That's why they bought DigiDesign, because they couldn't compete, you know, with the...
You know what, though? That's still one of the biggest mysteries in the history of the audio business is... Exactly. Not only why did Avid buy DigiDesign, but why did the products then not get integrated better? It's just now that things are finally starting to make sense.
I know why they bought
them. It's been a decade. There were competition?
No, it has nothing to do with that. It was for stock price.
All right.
Really?
Yeah. Look at that. Yeah, well, ultimately, that's what makes sense for people who keep... everything in, you know, the bean counters.
Right.
You know, we're talking about sounds and stuff, but they have quarters too.
Yeah.
Digi was definitely driving them for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
But do you think Digi has replaced major components in different industries? Because, I mean, I'm in the editorial, but I also like music. But on one hand, what was Pro Tools? Well, Pro Tools was it replaced your multi-track.
Yep.
It replaced your console.
Right.
It replaced your editing machine. And now it replaces your live console.
Yeah.
As a live... All of a sudden, and all of your outboard gear.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the studio... But what is it? Well, it wants to be everything to everybody. Because I was talking to them going, well, I know you're really happy with Pro Tools 9. But coming from Pro Tools 9 or 8 HD to Pro Tools 9 is a bit of a yawn. It's not. There's not much. Indeed. Every Pro Tools 9, and I'm like,
I agree.
Oh, okay.
No. I absolutely agree.
But what they do is it seems like once a year they address one of those industries. Yeah. Here's the music update.
Yeah.
Here's the post-production update. And they go back, you know, around in circles doing that. And eventually, maybe you'll get something you like.
Listen, Pro Tools 9 is definitely a small incremental upgrade as far as from Pro Tools 8. But what's amazing about
the foundation is amazing
is the fact that you're not tied into Digi hardware.
Yeah. Well, that's there's a lot of change, yeah. Just the same way, like Snow Leopard didn't seem all that different than Leopard if you already had Leopard. But there's a lot of under the hood changes, and Pro Tools 9 has a lot under the hood that's going to make future stuff possible.
No, absolutely. The foundation of Pro Tools 9 was now in reality, there's no LE anymore. It's just Pro Tools.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
And eventually, we all know that you know there's got to be some other future hardware solutions because
not for anymore.
Yeah, but not necessarily for music and instruments. But all of a sudden, if you want to have a 192 input or more console,
right.
And you want all the plugins and all the EQs and all the coolest compressors and all that stuff, even native, as good as it is, won't do it. HD3 won't. HD7 barely covers a full console. So what do you need? You need more horsepower, which we all know, and eventually, for that part of their support mechanism to create a full blown console that is truly equal to anything out there, they're going to need more horsepower somewhere.
For example, UAD cards.
UAD. Yeah. I think it's actually a bad strategic move on their part. I mean, as a user, I think it's great that it's native. It's a wonderful thing, but. For them as a company, they made most of their money on their hardware.
Yeah.
They gave away the software, and they made the money on the hardware. If you don't have to buy their hardware, where's their revenue stream?
Right.
The big revenue stream.
But their upper hardware is truly great sounding, and they've got M-Audio. So they do have like top and bottom coverage.
And I think the writing is on the wall with programs that were, let's face it, they were nipping at the heels, you know.
Well, Logic is really coming on strong still.
Yeah.
It surprises me because I think it's such an obtuse program.
But, it is.
It's really gaining some traction.
But it's $400. I mean, it's.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I have to admit, I even bought it and I'm not sure why. But it's. I mean, no, you can buy it. It's $400. Comes with great plugins. It's kind of new. There's a buzz going on. And it was cheaper. And a friend of mine told me the trick that happens. I said, it's only $400. It's the price of a plugin for a program that has lots of plugins.
Yeah.
What's and the then, trick?
Wait. Trick, he goes, did you happen to buy a computer with it to make sure it'll run properly? And I went, yeah. And he just smiled at me. Because everybody went, wow, but you need the latest, greatest to run it properly on it. So what do? You go buy a laptop.
Yep.
That's true. Yeah. But then you also have programs like, look at Ableton.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See?
Ableton. You got it.
Ableton. That's also.
Not Ableton.
That's right. Ableton. Look at Ableton Live. That is a. Brandon uses that more than anybody I know, and he does sound design.
I'm getting closer, though.
Yeah, and Diego's done some amazing things with Ableton.
No, because he introduced me to the religion.
Seriously, I'll go into Brandon's bay, and he'll be working on a trailer or something, and that'll be the only program that'll be open, and it'll do all his recording.
I use Cubase less and less. I mean, I still like that program, but Ableton is where it's at. It's
with pictures?
It's so cool. Quick.
Because of the warp markers and all kinds of stuff that you can do with that.
You can warp, you can stretch everything, and I know you can do this in other programs too, but it's very simple.
Yeah.
And other simple things like just wanting to group a track, you just highlight three tracks, hit group, and all of a sudden you've got like a sub, you've got another bus like going on. It's just that quick, and you can just, you know, send audio out to any other track. Very easy to modulate anything to anything. Oh, yeah. It's really really cool.
I tried to like that, and for some reason I just.
But is it still a loop? Isn't it still a loop controller rather than
it's much more than that?
It's you can actually play MIDI and do instruments.
You can do everything you can do with any.
And the warping sounds really good.
Yeah, you can decide the quality of that. Yeah. But the thing that I liked about Ableton Live the first time I used it. It's like Pro Tools. I have one page. Yes, I hate Logic because I need to use. I don't want to say it that bad, but I want to, you know, focus on one screenshot and work in that. Mm-hmm. Pro Tools and Ableton Live, they have the same concept, and I like it because it's easier for me. And Ableton, it's even better because when you open new effects, it just starts to pile up. and then you can scroll up and down. You can close them, you can open them. Everything stays in one page.
Yeah, I use Ableton Live a lot, and I actually just upgraded all my Cubases to Cubase 6, which adds some cool stuff. My problem is that until they have 64-bit rewire working, you can't be using the 64-bit versions of Cubase and other host machines, because a lot of systems communicate with Rewire, and Rewire doesn't work 64-bit yet. So we hear they've been working on it for a long time, and someday it'll happen, but that's like, you know, having two machines and there's no way to buy a cable between them. It's kind of annoying.
Well, let's go back to Pro Tools 9. You're right, that is annoying.
Thank you.
So I have Pro Tools. I've been able to play these giant sessions on my laptop. I think what's going to happen is people are going to start mixing in different places. I mean, literally, I can see my music production changing. I mean, and what I mean by that is, have you ever seen the picture, DigiDesign used to have it on their website, of Massenburg's recording studio over at Blackbird?
Blackbird, yeah.
Right, where it's all diffusion. Basically, it's just all those sticks that are pointing all over the place. Anyhow, I had the privilege of going in there and listening to some music in there and in the studio. And it literally, with all that diffusion, it sounds like you're in an open space, like you're outside. It's hard to say, but it sounds like when you go, hey, the reflections aren't coming back at you. It's like it's being thrown.
Yeah.
And I always, after I went there, I thought, you know, that'd be really kind of cool to have a rig where you could mix in a different environment than a studio environment. Because I would imagine you could really, not only just the inspiration of where you're at, but sonically you could probably do some really cool things, even if it's, you know, setting up some type of real reverb to catch, you know, the ambience where you're at or whatever. But it's just having the ability to control sound in an atmosphere that's not...
But how quickly you do that is the key. Because already, I mean, I did a session where I was recording in a studio and doing the stuff at my studio, but it's how quickly you can do that. You bring your laptop, you connect it, and it's up.
Right.
There's no transfer of data.
That's
hard.
That's exactly
like
the whole
that thing.
It's like, you know, I could totally see going out, you know, doing an acoustic album out in the Redwoods and, you know, having your little band there, and you play it and then you mix it right then and there. I mean, just having that kind of horsepower where you could run the plugins all natively. And sure, you've been able to kind of do that, and you could say you could do that. But now when you really can get the massive track counts and you can do a ton of takes and with the... there's going to be some person out there who's gonna make a name for himself by doing these really cool sonic, you know, mixes or albums that will never have seen four walls of a studio, because it's just gonna be that portable. And that's what kind of, you know, made me go, man, the game has truly changed, because now, like you said, Diego, it's all right there. You put a little, you know, get a little Motu, you know, the one of their interfaces, and
An AC portable drive, and that's it. That's all you need.
And your iLock. I mean, what do you guys think of that?
I love it, personally. I look forward to it. Can you see
something like that happening? Or?
That will happen, and I see the merits in that. But the truth is, for the way I work, and I think the way Scott works, it's more important for me. Like, my main console on my main rig, I have, I guess, five machines now running Pro Tools 9, but the main one is an HD 6, and it has the big D control and... you know, a lot of plugins and everything, and I think it has 160 inputs and outputs.
Right, right.
So we're using it like a giant console. I am not at all interested in native processing for that thing. I want to know that I have as many DSP cards as I possibly can, that they're as powerful as they can be, and that I'm never going to have the system say, well, I played that track back the previous five times, but this time I ran out of horsepower.
That's true.
If they see any error message other than you've just won $1 million pop up on the screen, they immediately lose faith. They're stomping out of the room. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just, no, I totally understand.
Yeah, for that situation, it makes sense. Yeah,
so but you have to realize in the Pro Tools world, and Avid realizes this very, very well, you have all kinds of users all over the map, both geographically and, you know, feature-wise and user experience level-wise. They have to cater to every single one of those users. So the same machine that you're liking, where you can go, you know, record in a forest someplace, Scott needs to be able to play back 10 billion tracks on a dubbing stage, and you're running the exact same piece of software.
That's pretty amazing.
That is really amazing. Yeah. I mean, that on paper would not have made sense to me a few years ago. The fact that they've actually pulled that off, because they've actually hugely widened the array of people that they cater to, and they're creating less and less software to do it. They're getting rid of versions, you know, getting rid of LE.
Yeah.
So there aren't too many people or companies that have done that successfully by catering to a lot more clients with a lot less software.
But the only concern I do have, though, is that sometimes I'm always concerned that Pro Tools is trying to be everything to everybody.
There's no question. And, but there's the concern.
We just found a problem with satellite. And most people wouldn't be a problem, but if you run something beyond 20 minutes, it drifts.
What?
Ooh.
So when we're playing back a movie and we're doing a full playback in satellite, we found all of a sudden going, wait a minute.
That must just be under certain cases, because we've done that plenty of times.
Now, it's something I've heard in the dubbing stage.
But you know what? Bugs happen. You can't. If they don't fix it, that's one thing.
Right,
but bugs are going to happen.
But at this point, what I had heard, and this is more third party, is that. Because I said, oh, let's use satellite. Satellite's great. And I use satellite all the time.
Wait, what is satellite really quick? Could you explain?
Oh, satellite is the ability to synchronize 5 different machines together without time code.
Over Ethernet.
Over Ethernet. And it's great. And I've used it a lot when I'm doing my video game mixes. I use it all the time. But they're only like 3, 4, 10 minutes maybe. That's it. I've never had a problem. Then on the dubbing stage, I said, hey, I'm going to do this one piece. Let's pop the machines together. Let's do it via satellite. They're like, hey, wait a minute. We're finding that all of a sudden you play back a film. Like, you talk about we don't want problems. You play back a film. They're watching it. 21, 22, 23 minutes goes by, and they're like, oh, shit. The dialogue's out of sync. Now, all of a sudden, directors and producers are pretty much freaking out.
Well, obviously, they're looking that's at not the- acceptable.
Yeah, so
you know, let me jump in here for a second. I have to be careful because I, like a lot of us, am non-disclosured up the yin-yang. Can't talk about too much stuff. But I've done a lot of work with Avid over the years, and I can honestly say I don't think I've ever encountered a company that was more dedicated to finding and eliminating bugs just like that.
Oh, absolutely.
But so if a bug happens, it's obviously understandable because it's an incredibly complicated piece of software. If something that horrible, and I agree that's horrible, if that doesn't get fixed really, really fast, I would be completely shocked.
But really, really fast might be 1 or 2 shows later.
Well, but you know what? They're worrying about their existence as a company. They can only do it as fast as their engineers can figure it out and find it. But they have entire departments and teams of people who do nothing but hunt down problems like that. And they're motivated by the size of the industry you're in. There are teams that do it just for post, and those teams are much more active, as far as I can tell, than the teams that do it for music, because they realize how much money's on the line. If you have these systems sitting on a dubbing stage where thousands of dollars an hour are being spent, they understand
but,
that.
But, you know, like when we just had a – it was great. Avid came down to Soundlux, because we have so many systems, and we had our own private – tutoring, you know, thing. And, you know, it was interesting. We've been talking about the same feature sets. Like, in sound effects, if I download 1,200 sounds, there's 1,200 different sounds. Can I get a foldering system?
Yeah.
Can I get something that we've had in computers?
Yeah, I've been screaming about that one for a long time.
So, what's up with that?
And the thing, and I do sympathize. And they go, look, it's on the list, and things move up and down the list.
It is definitely on the list.
But what happens, though, is because it's trying to be so many things to everybody, it's on the list. They'll get to it eventually. Being able to swap 2 sounds between 2 different sessions. Just go open up 2 sessions and take the sound and swap it over, because you got to go from row 1 to row 2. Can I just do that? You can't.
No.
They used to have a program, a third-party program that did it, but they didn't do it. It just means that...
What program was that?
That gallery thing?
Yeah. We can actually... There were people that have done things. I mean, they just got the feet and frames fixed about a year and a half ago.
Wow.
Where you could just sit there and say... It always there. It just never worked. It just means that because there's so... You're trying to do so much. And it is a massively impressive company. But for everybody, you just got to wait. And it'll come eventually. But it could take 2, 3, 4 years before that those feature sets get to you.
Mm-hmm. You know what else, though? Another thing I'm going to say, just in their defense, because, well, and I don't really know why I'm countering this,
but
I don't have a real reason to defend them, because they're doing just fine. But
I'm enjoying the show.
Well, when you say, excuse me, when you talk about something like Satellite having a bug, I'm sure lots of users have experienced that bug, but I use Satellite all the time, and I haven't experienced the bug. So it's obviously not just that Satellite doesn't work in general.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I just said it.
But the thing is, though, these rumors, things like this, we have, you know, millions and millions of listeners on this podcast. And if we mention something, don't we? We
yes.
do, right?
That's yes. why we've been millions doing it. Millions and millions.
But if word like that gets spread around, it's the same thing. I noticed when Pro Tools 9 came out, when it first came out, it had a terrible reputation. Everybody was saying it's buggy, it doesn't work right. Everybody was assuming that because now it would work with any kind of hardware layer, that it must be buggy because that's so difficult to do. And the truth is, I asked, and I don't think this is a secret anymore, but I asked some of the people I know at the company, what was the actual feedback coming back to customer service like? What were the bug reports like? What was coming back? And the truth is, they had a much bigger beta program than they had ever had for a previous release of software. And Pro Tools 9 was way less problematic than Pro Tools 8 had been. But that's not what the perception in the world was. But Pro Tools 9 was actually a much cleaner release with far fewer big problems than Pro Tools 8.
Hmm.
And Pro Tools 8 didn't get that better rap when it came out.
Actually, but I heard Pro Tools 9 had a good rap.
Not in the beginning.
Oh, really?
No. As a matter of fact, you told me you
never heard
terrible
anything
things
bad about
it,
though. I would just...
I heard lots.
Oh, okay. Well, I can tell you, it's perfect.
You know,
it's not perfect. It's perfect in every way.
It's not perfect.
You know what's interesting is what I've seen in R, which is firsthand. Like, I've had Pro Tools 9 for a while, and I've actually had no problems with it. It's been really solid. I have had other people in the company that have crashed a bunch. And it's always fascinating, because as what's great about power users and people that do that is everyone's trying to find what happened. It could be like, oh, I used a Lucy drive or something, and all of a sudden I did a configuration of 400, 800, you know, and all of a sudden that crashed it. It's always good to talk amongst yourselves to find out why is one machine solid and one machine not.
But the ultimate truth about this is that it's if you insult your computer, it's not going to work. And if you say some words of love, I love you. We all know how it works.
So you got to put the bonsai tree with the...
There is a technical explanation, but it works.
Yes. When in doubt, set it on fire.
And I will say this before we move on, that about the only two people who will use 5 Pro Tools System Satellite together or sitting in this room.
No, all right. There are others.
All right. Well, anyhow, Pro Tools, I think it's going to change the game. I'm excited on just where it can go and some of the stuff that's been happening. But I wanted to ask David, who's been with Pro Tools and has written and has been involved with the company, how do you feel about the evolution of Pro Tools? Did you ever foresee it being, well, for one thing, released from the hardware? Did you ever see that one coming?
Yeah. Actually, I was hoping that they were going to do that because it was so many people were griping about it, and I think it seemed like the natural progression. And I know, you know, we were talking earlier about how that would affect their bottom line, but I think that they still are going to have a lot of hardware that's going to be sold if they keep the quality up. Because they're putting some decent stuff out, and they're, you know, adding on the Euphonics line, and, you know, I think their focus on the live sound stuff is where their big hardware is going to come in, you know, purchasing wise.
But I'll tell you, I picked up from, because I got 2 studios. I got a D-Command at Soundlux, and then I've got another system with 2 Artist Series Euphonics, and they've got to blow me away. I mean, I think for $2,000. Which I got 2 of them. I got the mix unit and then the fader unit, whatever it's called. And I'm really impressed because all of a sudden we talked about like the iPad. I got a touchscreen panner.
Yep.
Hmm. All of us. And I've got touch knobs. So when you compare the Artist Series Euphonics to, let's say, a D command. I'm sorry, a D control.
It's a little cheaper.
It's way more powerful.
Like 100.
Because Control 24, you had nudge knobs, which means it writes when you move it, but when you take your fingers off it, it's still in right.
Right.
So you can maybe do right latch.
Right.
Now all of a sudden, for this little $800 and $1,000 unit, it's actually got touch knobs. So I think that while I wouldn't want to do a full-blown mix on it,
right,
having a tool, whether a musician, for sound designers, I think it's the best thing out there. And I'm a huge fan of it. And what I like is that you're able to configure faders with tracks because it's got the whole Yukon protocol built into it. And it's only just the beginning because they've got all this really cool stuff that's coming out for it.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff coming out. I mean, no doubt about that. It's I think they made the right choice, and it's only going to get bigger. And there's a reason why they're so popular in the first place, because you still can't touch it as far as editing sound goes, no matter what Brandon says. No, Brandon, Chris, why have you never jumped on the Pro Tools wagon?
You know what?
I'm not forcing you.
Here's exactly why. In the beginning, when I had the choice of buying either Pro Tools or Cubase,
right,
Pro Tools had hardware, and Cubase was just software. So I went with the cheaper Cubase. And then, that's where I've been.
And I think that's going to
I stopped using Cubase when I lost the dongle a long time ago. I was like, okay,
I was a big Nuendo user from version 1. And I just got so sick of transferring projects from Pro Tools or to Pro Tools that finally I just gave in. And I said, okay, I'm one of you now. And I haven't looked back. It's been great.
I was the same way. I was a diehard Waveframe guy, a diehard Synclavier guy. I've been a diehard of many different kind of guys. And then I always get pulled kicking and screaming to the next thing. But the interchangeability with people now with Pro Tools, I just didn't want to fight that fight.
Yeah.
And this, I actually started with Pro Tools when it was Pro Tools for Windows NT. I was the first Windows NT user, and it sucked. eventually it worked, but it didn't work well, and, you know, it was way ahead of its time.
Yeah.
But the writing was on the wall about how everybody... I actually remember the moment when I realized that we couldn't turn back. I was going to do a session with Jennifer Lopez, and she showed up at my place with Pro Tools data. And no one from the record company had asked if we had Pro Tools. And luckily we did.
Right.
But at that moment I said, okay, if they're now showing up, you know, expecting for a big artist with data in this format, that's like showing up with a 2-inch tape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at that point, I can never not have Pro Tools again because I don't want to lose a gig because some artist showed up and I can't play their stuff.
Yeah.
It was also great. That was the moment. Right now, we're in the middle of doing a gig almost as we speak, and where we're going back and forth between Vancouver, Canada. So we're doing sessions, we're doing mixes, we're editing all on one session through DigiDelivery going back and forth. And it's pretty amazing. We've also been using Dropbox.
Mm. Dropbox is cool.
That's good.
Dropbox is cool. So all of a sudden, he can take a look at it and see, hey, where are you at? So during the session, he can just open it up at any given moment because it keeps updating into Dropbox. Wow. So every time we hit save, he's saving to Dropbox. Oh, the guy on the other side goes, let me see where we're at right this second.
Oh, that's cool.
Opens up the session and all of a sudden sees exactly where the mix is going.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, and just know, times are changing. You're going to be doing some great things. And you know what? Don't be afraid to do some wild stuff, you know? And if that means going out and recording outside and mixing outside or whatever, just take some chances. And there's some great
gear. That's a big thing for you, isn't it?
Yeah. I get the whole recording outside. I'm not sure I get the mixing outside.
You know what? It is a big thing for me because... You know, I've worked, I mixed post-production.
Because you grew up outside.
So you know, for me, shorts by the pool.
What if you get a gig and it's like an outside exhibition, outside installation, and you need to mix outside? Because that's the ultimate.
That's different, yeah.
No, you know what?
And it could be,
can you turn the birds down a little bit?
Yeah. Listen, I'm just saying, you know, I've worked for the last 15 years in a cube, you know, mixing.
There's
right?
an acoustician somewhere's eyes are rolling around.
No, but seriously, it's like I'm really kind of getting into just paying attention to audio and just paying attention to the world around us. Listen, this is kind of conceptual, but there's this thing called bioacoustical footprints, where basically there are no two places on this planet that sound the same. Where I am right now talking is I have a bioacoustical footprint that's totally different than where Rob is next to me or where you are.
It's trying to say that he's better, but he should say something
no,
about
it. But seriously, but you know, sound all around us is, you know, has such a big effect on us. And I just think if we can break some of these, you know, bonds that kind of keep us down, and not even keep us down, just take us into a different place, a different realm. You know, I wish I could just take all you guys and show you what Massenburg Studio sounds like, but it's like being outside. It's total diffusion.
But what you're trying to say, though, I think that what is massively important, I don't know if I agree with the mix side, but when you want to compose music, when you want to find something that inspires you to do something, and you don't want to be in that black room or the gray room or the wood room with no windows, you can actually sit by the pool, lay down some ideas on the, you know, on your laptop or whatever, and be inspired, whether ski slopes, Grand Canyon, wherever,
but, you know,
and just lay down tracks.
But it doesn't have to be a pool. It could be a great. It can be a great room. It can be a great. I mean, you
why
have
not mix
guys,
in the dance club?
There you go. You know? Mix where you're going to perform. Mix. I mean, there's just so many different places. It's
The other good news is big, beautiful studios are dying everywhere, so you can get into some really beautiful rooms for really cheap. But so try it from time to time.
Well, yeah, but there's also the whole, you know, being inspired too. Just taking it to the next level. Let's put it this way.
White stripes.
Everybody has a lot of the same tools, right? And if you want to break free from the pack, people are going to have to take some chances. And you're going to, you know, it may not work, but it may work awesome. You know, there's just so much you can do out there now. And now that you have all the power in a notebook and you have a program like Pro Tools that you can literally do some of this stuff that you couldn't do 2 years ago, you know, let alone
years
ago.
You know what, though?
Any creative ways.
But anybody who says the software is what was stopping them from being creative.
I'm not saying that either, because you could, you know.
You could always figure out a way to do something.
Yeah, you could, but it's just, it becomes a little more accessible, a little easier.
Yeah.
A little bit more. And it's just little increments, little baby steps. Because now, yeah, sure, why not get some good headphones and go out and see if the Grand Canyon and be inspired and mix something. I don't know. It's just things are going to happen.
I can't find two mix rooms that sound the same, so it kind of freaks me out. So the concept of just, like, every speaker sounds different, every acoustic space.
Well, that's true. If you're trying to mix stuff that will sound the same to the maximum number of listeners, you're probably not going to mix with the Grand Canyon.
But you know what? I would like
to go to the Grand Canyon.
People are mixing
and bring some speakers down and do something specifically for that space.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about the idea generation where you can put FaceTime on.
So when
you know,
are we going
iPad.
To the Grand Canyon, basically? <That's>
You can video your original idea right at the beginning of the inception of the idea.
Yeah.
You know, so, and that's like...
Bomb! That's because you said inception.
No, but you make a great point.
But artists, I mean, want to put that stuff out. Yeah. Fans love to see that stuff.
No, it's so true. Listen, I'd love to, you know, see what Diego would do in the Grand Canyon. Yeah. With,
believe me, with, it would involve ropes.
I mean, come on.
Scratches on my arms.
That reverb chamber alone.
Yeah.
I always love good ideas that, like, I remember when Pro Tools was semi-portable, we said, you know what? Forget all these recording rigs that we've got. We're going to take Pro Tools. We have so many inputs. We're going to do shoots. So we take the rigs outside. We go outside. And this is really great. We've got everything there. And guess what? We can't see the screen because the sun's in the way. So we create something that we can actually see the screen. Next thing we know, the battery's dying.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
We've got to do the battery. Next thing we know, we're chasing around trying to get Pro Tools to work. Guess what we're not doing? Yeah. We're not recording anything.
Right.
So there are some practicality issues to our
health. Listen, I'm not saying you're going to be doing a film outside, but... You know, I've mixed commercials in a coffee shop before in the old version.
There's no reason. Jingles in a train station.
There you go.
So, with Pro Tools.
Yeah,
it sounded like that.
It's coming. All right, well, we're going to wrap up our... You know, we tried it an hour, so I apologize. Hey, but David, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
And
it's been great.
Really appreciate it. And why don't you tell us a little bit about, you do some online education stuff and...
Yeah, Berklee College of Music has their online school, berkleemusic.com. I've written a few courses for them, mostly about Pro Tools and music production. So students can interact, sending me their sessions. I can tell them how to do stuff. They send me their MP3s, so we share music. Students from all over the world. You know, I think I've probably taught students from 50 or 60 different countries. We also do courses, video training for Pro Tools through lynda.com, and they're doing all kinds of other, not just Pro Tools, but this whole audio line.
Great.
I will say lynda.com totally rocks.
Nice.
I love lynda.com.
And why don't you give the URL of your website, too?
So I have davidfrans.com, which is all about me. And then Underground Sun is my artist development company where I have the work that I've done with a few different artists that we're blowing up. And you can go there and read about the Evolving Album, which is this new
I
thing.
I read
that,
about it.
Yeah,
I
so,
like
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas basically if you artists will come in and if you buy their album for $10, then email us and let us know that you want the Evolving Album content, and then we'll send you all kinds of free updates to the album as I work on them with the artists. So we'll have acoustic versions, remixes, new videos, new songs, and you get all of that for $10. So it's kind of like a...
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's a great deal.
Yeah, it's like a fan club for $10, and you get all kinds of cool stuff.
That's right. Awesome. And yeah. And that's at, where is that? What's the URL?
Undergroundsun.com.
Great.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining us today, and we appreciate it, man. We'll definitely check that out. That sounds really cool.
Thanks.
Rob, are you working on anything besides trying to stay alive in airplanes?
let me think. Also, before I go on, let me also say that lynda.com, it's L-Y-N-D.
Yeah, yes. I was trying to say that too.
I'm trying to find the notes on my phone here, trying to go lynda.com. Mm-hmm.
And Franz is F-R-A-N-Z?
Z, F-R-A-N-Z, okay. Yes, thanks.
Just for the spelling.
Underground
spelling
Sun, S-U-N.
Okay.
And we'll put links on the podcast notes, but didn't.
Cool. Actually, for the last week, I have been away visiting the family. So I have been working on some web stuff, but other than that, nothing musical. I'm supposed to do some more industrial film work this week, but I only got back a couple hours ago, so I don't actually know the schedule yet. But definitely check out noisyneighbors.com, my company's website. There's some new stuff up there that we've been working on, and I'm always working to improve that site. So it finally has a lot of content on it.
Brandon.
Well, Mike, you know what I'm doing. I just got a new Sennheiser CSS 5.
That's right.
Stereo shotgun like that, and Sound Devices 702. So I got my field rig and I'm recording everything possible.
And you know what? It's pretty awesome because
that's a great rig.
We did we did some sound effects today that, I mean, it sounded great. That microphone is just phenomenal.
Beautiful mic.
Beautiful microphone.
I'm very happy.
Jealous.
So I spent the last few days recording every door I could possibly.
Did you go wide? Did you go wide or narrow?
I've been testing it out. Yeah. You know, just getting to know it. But I've gone mono for most of those things. What's your recommendation? Do you have a lot of experience with that mic?
Yeah, I've got the mic.
Oh, you do? Cool.
Yep. And it just depends if you want to go backgrounds and you want to get that width and air. The wide's really sweet. I find all three modes on it's very usable.
Mm-hmm. For not ambiences, but for sound effects, do you ever use the stereo
mode?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Basically, the mono's a shotgun. It's a dual mono shotgun, and then normal is just a nice stereo field, and then wide is actually getting rid of the center and going all side. Yeah.
Yeah. Great mic. Everything sounds great, though.
It's a great mic.
No, the Sound Devices is a gorgeous machine, boy.
The 702 is great.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. It's phenomenal. And the one thing that I noticed, too, is just has a lot of low end, a lot of beef. You know, some of these, you know, like the H4N and some of the smaller Palm recorders and stuff.
Once you get to the real, not the real stuff, but once you get to that level, it seriously is the Sound Devices stuff.
Yeah.
Is very, very, very good. And if you want to really blow your mind, go with the 302 Mic Pre.
Oh, yeah.
And that will take you to a whole other level.
Notes.
Notes.
It's the analog front end to all of these digital recorders that make all the difference.
It's as good as anything out there for Mic Pre.
And you really can you just notice an amazing difference, especially just simple little sound effects that you're, like we were doing some coin toss for this video game that we're working on, and just has to sound like bags of money hitting, mm-hmm. and we just wrapped a bunch of coins and we were dropping it, and And it sounded okay, and we thought it was going to get work, and then you hear the files, and you're like, holy smokes.
Yeah, this has some balls to it.
Yeah, it had a lot of heft and
detail,
stuff.
Detail, so high-end, like, transients.
It was great. Yeah. It was awesome. And it survived pitch shifting without going all
crazy.
Yeah,
we recorded at 96, and dropping an octave, it still has a lot of impact. It doesn't, like, lose its energy. Yeah.
Did you do 192 yet?
No, I haven't done that yet.
Training wheels. You gotta walk, you know, before you run. Yeah. Diego! What about you?
I'm working on a very cool project. I'm not going to say exactly what it is, but I can give you some details. It should be out by the time the podcast will be posted. It's going to be a lot of sound designers and major electronic artists involved in this project. It's a great idea, great cause, and I'm having a lot of fun. It's very creative, of course, nice. And it's going to be out soon, so by the time the podcast will be out, you'll see. It's a great idea. Right. I'll tell more the next time.
Great.
But, yeah.
Scott?
I got some stuff.
Yes, you do. Well,
No, this is good stuff. Well, first of all, we did the Golden Reel Awards, and we were very proud that out of the computer entertainment, we were nominated for 4 out of 5 out of 12 and nominations. So we had 4 of the 5, and we won for Epic Mickey.
Oh. Nice.
So
nice.
That was, yeah, thank you. My movie's coming out, I think any day now, which is Red Riding Hood.
The premiere was tonight.
So there you go. Guess where I'm not? Because I wanted to be with you guys.
That's right.
That's out, and right now working on a really cool game, which I'll be able to talk about soon. But in addition, last but not least, I've been part of the sound design competition sponsored by Waves. And basically what they did was they publicized. Charles Dean and myself came up with a bundle for Waves called the Sound Design Suite.
Yeah. Right.
And we brought on David Farmer and Tom Ozanich. And what they did was we supplied a Need for Speed video. I got Hollywood Edge to supply the sound effects. And there was a giant competition. We had 287 people before we had to shut it off.
Wow.
And it's huge. So we have the sessions, we've got all of their mixes, and they're all competing for a Waves package.
Nice.
So in the next 2.5 weeks, we have to
listen to
go through that.
We have to listen.
I know how it feels when you do the contest.
Oh, yeah. It's fascinating. I mean, what's great is it's people all over the world.
Right.
I mean, we're getting people from everywhere, and they write descriptions of what they used and why they used it, and it's fascinating to see if somebody takes, here's the same sounds, here's the same plugins, how very different it is.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I'm finding just fascinating, listening to everybody's stuff.
Well, that's awesome. Well, so, I'm looking forward to updates on that.
Yeah.
Bobby?
I've been really busy, actually. First of all, my new book, The Studio Builder's Handbook, just came out, which is how to basically take any room and make it sound pretty good.
Well, that's cool. Nice.
And for not a lot of money.
That's great.
I'm also working on 2 other books at the same time. I'm working with Ken Scott, the engineer-producer of some note, one of the 4 Beatle engineers, producer for David Bowie, Elton John, Supertramp. And I'm co-writing his memoirs, which is a lot of fun. It's been really good. And I'm also updating my Music 3.0 book as well for the second edition.
Oh, great.
But the big news is I'm in discussions to produce essentially what's going to be a Live from Abbey Road, only in the U.S.
Wow.
Television show. And it's going to be done in 3D.
Wow.
So cool. That seems to be, pretty cool.
It is.
That is cool. Yeah. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
We're going to have to talk later. That's pretty cool. All right, well.
What about you, Mike?
How about you?
Hey, yeah. Mike, what are you up to?
Pushing coins with Brandon, you know?
Dreaming about the iPad 2.
Well, first of all,
I'm working on one of those projects where I can't tell you what I'm working on or who I'm working for. Or what I'm working
I love those.
We have plenty of time.
But it has potential to turn really ugly really fast. And so after it airs on TV, I'll tell you all the gory details. But until then, I'll just have to not say a thing.
That was fun, huh?
Yeah. We'll see. I will say, though, that one of these things that I'm mixing, I think I'm going to mix it on my laptop because I have way better plugins on my laptop than I do on my rig where I mix during the day. And it's...
They don't take care of us there, do they?
No, apparently not. And it's and literally, it's like... And the hard part with that, I'm trying not to say anything, but the hard part about that is... The client may want to supervise the mix, and I'm just trying to picture myself sitting in the client table area with my laptop and an extra screen mixing their project, and then my big D Command and Pro Tools system on the in front just sitting empty, and they're going like,
"So you
got to
remember, part of it's got to be the show."
Yeah, right.
You know, you got to get a paper console.
Listen,
just put it into Vegas mode and let it go crazy. Exactly. Yeah. Look at all the stuff I'm doing.
I understand that. And believe me, and if they're going to supervise, I'm not going to do it. But if they're not going to supervise, you better believe it. I'm going to be out in the Redwoods mixing this
right,
thing.
Exactly.
I think that's about it. If you want to reach us, you can catch us on our Facebook page at facebook.com/audionowcast, and you can also reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And once again, gang, I want to thank everybody on our Facebook page for giving us those good little notes of congratulations for our 100th podcast. Yeah. And it's great. We have a good time doing this, and we look forward to doing another 100 for you guys. All right, so we'll see you next time.
To the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by API and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez and uses AFEX's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.